We'll start with the pheasant, and I'm going to address specifically questions raised by both Rav Nosson Goldberg and Rav Chaim Loike, because the pheasant is a good way to get into them. If you read on this page that is in the handout, it starts off with the ring-neck pheasant. The ring-neck pheasant is all over the world, and the OU has been having problems in deciding whether to certify it. And the background of these problems is this. Rav Nosson, Rav Chaim, and I have been in the have been engaged in long conversations. I started out with this several years ago, talking with Rabbi Belsky about what our parameters would be. It goes back to this. It actually goes back, I will specifically reference a tshuva that was written to Dr. Greenspan. Dr. Greenspan and his partner in crime, Ari Zivotofsky, have been, they thought when they were young it would be a lark to learn about shechting all these animals. And then they quickly realized that it's more than a lark. It's a halachic inyan. All the people who had masilas about which birds to shecht that were not commonly in commercial production in America, those people were dying. The old generation was dying, and Ari Greenspan and Ari Zivotofsky realized, unless we go to these people and preserve the traditions, then pretty soon we get to the position that we are in now, where there's almost nobody left who remembers, yes, in Europe we shechted this, yes, in Yemen we shechted that, in Algeria we shechted that. The Masailas are being lost, and now there are very few who can left on it. So Ari went around trying to learn as much as they can about different traditions of birds and animals, but mostly birds, because birds we need a maseo, about which ones were being checked. And they got information from a couple of people about the pheasant. Pheasant was something that was shechted, accepted as kosher. They went to Rav Gafech, Rav Yosef Gafech of the Yemenite community, and he identified the pheasant for them, met all the conditions for what the Masayot is. Let me take one step back before we get into that, and let me explain to you, because laymen often don't understand the concept of Masayot. Rabboni, I'm including in layman, because Masayot is a technical issue. I come from a field of studies which is based on Masayot. My doctorate is in linguistics. Linguistics is the science which is based totally on Masayot, because language is learned by Masayot. What's the difference between figuring out something by Masayot and figuring out logically? Because Masayot is based on one of the five senses. The Silky wants to put in, because we'll be talking about him with the Masayot. Masayot is something that you saw, you heard, you felt, you smelled, you touched. Right? One of the five senses. And that's the way you learn to identify it. I know that that's a rooster, because when I was taught to shout, they said, that's a rooster, and I remember in my mind what it looks like. Okay? There's a big difference between that and saying, I saw in the sefer a description, and it must be that. It's the same thing in a language. You know, people ask me how many languages I know. I refuse to answer on the grounds of principle, because a lot of the languages I know are not spoken. Ancient Coptic, ancient Aramaic, are not spoken by anybody anymore. So how do you know what the language is like? Oh, you say, we go to the book and we look at what's written. Well, how do we know it was pronounced? How do we know that the book was not using a specialized dialect? You don't know unless you hear the language. Language is only transmitted by Masayot, not through books. Okay, Masayot, where we need for birds, is based on this. The We have a reliable person, not a guy from the street, but a guy who is shechted, a Yerei Shamayim who comes out and says, this is a bird we shechted. Okay? Ari and Ari wrote a letter to the Moshe Feinstein saying, we have accumulated evidence that the pheasant was indeed shechted. And based on that, Reb Moshe had written the tshuva many, many years before that says, we have no evidence that we have no masayla. So Ari and Ari gathered a masayla and went to Reb Moshe and said, we have this, and this book describes it like this. And Reb Moshe gave them an answer. The answer was written by a secretary, so some people can say, maybe it wasn't his own answer, but if you read the answer, it's Reb Moshe. That's what Reb Moshe would say. Reb Moshe would say, even though intellectually I am convinced that the pheasant is kosher, but from the halachic point of view, we need an oral and a visual tradition to shech the bird. In other words, you can prove to me from a sefer that the book is kosher and I will believe it. But I can't check it and I can't certify it because I don't have a masil. This is actually the shita of the Beis HaLevi, which I learned about. One of the things you learned in Boston growing up under the Rav was that you heard many things from him which were halacha l'maisa, not just svaras, which he said in the yeshiva, but practical questions. I heard him talk about turkey many times. The Rav, as a matter of fact, not only ate turkey and held that it was no shayla at all, based on his tradition from Reb Chaim, but I'll show you there's a halachic issue why the Rav felt there's no issue in it. Not only did he ate it on Thanksgiving. Because the Rav said, participating in a pagan holiday, in a pagan religious holiday, is also because of Avodah Zarah. But Thanksgiving was never instituted as a religious holiday. Rather, it was instituted as an opportunity for Americans, whatever religion they are, to give thanks to God. Yeah, the pilgrims originally did it for a religious reason, but that's not the way, that's not the reason. Who here is descended from pilgrims? You know, almost nobody is descended from pilgrims. Immigrants, yes, but not pilgrims. And the issue was it was instituted as an opportunity for Americans to thank God, and the Rav held would be a chilul Hashem that if the goyim are all saying this is an opportunity for us to thank God, the Jews say, well, we're not involved, we don't have to thank God. So the Rav held that there was an inyan in participating in the holiday, the secular holiday. The secular holiday, Thanksgiving was never celebrated in churches. The secular holiday of Thanksgiving, and if that involved eating a bird, you know, who cares? The Rav wasn't saying that it's a chiyuv to eat a bird. It's a chiyuv to show that we Jews thank God ourselves, but to say, but if they celebrated by eating a bird, why not? It's a kosher bird. The issue was that the Rav talked about several times, was the issue of what is a masayro and how can we prove it? And the issue came up with the issue of techeles. Because it was the same thing, the Razin Rabbi claimed he had found techeles. Beis HaLevi said, noted the facts, even though he didn't know as much as we know nowadays, the facts that he had were correct. There is absolutely no Jewish community in the world, whether Yemenites, whether in Afghanistan, whether anywhere, that had any masorah about what the Cheles is. And so the Beis HaLevi says, you can bring to me all your svaras about why this ink or that ink is Cheles, and maybe I would be intellectually convinced that the preponderance of evidence points that way, but that's not a masorah. You need a masorah of a specific identification. In the Torah, several places it says, the Kodesh Baruch Hu her aloi ba'etzba, when it needed a specific identification. How do we know what an etzba is? You go to read books, you never find out whether it's an ester or a lemon or a grapefruit until the modern books when they use modern terms. You never find out because of the Salem Midoroideros. And the Beis HaLevi said, you can bring me all the intellectual proofs in the world you want, but you're never going to have a Masero. And so, there is no Masero on Techeves. And then the question is, the Radzina's fallback position was, fine, okay, you tell me it's not, it may not be Techeves, but what the danger is, there are answers for that too. I'm not here to talk about Techeves, there are answers for the archaeological proofs. I myself am not convinced 100% intellectually that it's Techeves, but this was the issue of the issue. You cannot create intellectually a Masero. Masero means I saw it, I felt it, I heard it, and this is what it was. Ramosha was basically saying the same thing. To the Mater on Earth, you can convince me intellectually that this is kosher meat, but practically we need a Masero. Like the Rabbi Yitzchok in the Gemara said, we need a Masora. We don't have a Masora, and you cannot intellectually invent a Masora. Now, it is true that if you found a keber, and it said this is Rabbi Akiva, and you could prove that this is Rabbi Akiva, and he's holding a bird, and it's written this is some sort of bird. Maybe that would constitute a Masora. Maybe, but. We don't have that. Yes, sir. Convinced. Yes. That's what I said. Yes. Right. And unfortunately, they never got a tshuva from that. Rav Moshe was already ill and never got an answer to that. That's the issue which the OU is grappling with now. We have a Masora from some communities. At one point, we say this is an acceptable Masora for the OU to inscribe. But let me get back. That's exactly right. But let me get back to the halakhic issue, because there are two sides to this idea, to this sheet of it. You cannot have a Masora. There's a chumrah, as it may be, I don't know whether you can call it a chumrah, that saying we cannot check this bird or we cannot wear techeles because we have no Masora. But there's also, if you're talking about conceptually, establishing a Masora, it's also, if you have a Masora from a reliable person, says in Shulchan Aruch, if you have a Masora from a reliable person, you do not, the Shulchan Aruch does not say you ask that person where he got the Masora, and he has to tell you, I got it from so-and-so. But you don't ask, how could that person possibly have a Masora? If there's an existing Masora, established by older sheikhtim, younger sheikhtim, established within the kehila by Talmidei Chachamim, you are not obligated to ask the intellectual question, where could this Masora have possibly come from? Which is the issue with Turkey. Turkey was introduced in Europe. We know when it was introduced in Europe, but the shyness and tshuvas of the Jews don't come until much later, when it was already established as a kosher bird in communities in the New World and in some communities in the Old World. Based on that, if you have a Masora, well, this is not somebody who said, oh, I read in a book somewhere, but a person who said, I saw my Rebbe shechting a turkey. Now you can have all the Sephardic questions that you want about where could this have possibly come from, considering that turkeys only came from the New World, and despite the issues, turkeys 100% are from the New World. The issue of coming through India was only how they were introduced, because turkeys very quickly spread. They came to Spain, they went to India. The question is how they reached the Jews in Eastern Europe. They came from different directions. That's a question. But there's no question at all, absolutely no question, that they came from the new world. So you can ask all the Sephardic questions you have. How could there possibly be a Masechta about this bird? And then you can go in the Achronim and find out various Teirutzim about why you... But the Maaser, Reb Chaim held, that wasn't the issue. If you have a Masechta, it says in the Shulchan Aruch how you check a Masechta, and you follow that. You don't have to ask conceptually how could it ever have been created. So that's the other side. Now, I want to address one other topic because connected with this. Yes? Yes, it is, but there's another issue that the OU has to deal with, the question raised with grasshoppers. The Yemenites have a masoil for grasshoppers. Rashi said, we don't have a masoil, we don't eat them. Rashi says, the custom is we don't eat grasshoppers. He doesn't say, if we could only bring a Yemenite or somebody, we could eat them. And so the question is, if you have a sheikhe from one kehillah, is that enough to establish? And that's an issue I don't want to go into, but that's an issue that faces the OU in certification. Okay? Now, the issue I wanted to bring up also is the fungibility of appearances. You understand that al pi halacha, what is koveya is not any intellectual discussion about what the genus and the species is. Nobody ever said that to establish a bird as a kosher species, you have to know the way the biologists classify it. If it looks like a chicken, if it walks like a chicken, it's a chicken. Okay? Now, here. Actually, I was going to hold it up for you, but it has when we moved it to Lambert Auditorium, this on top was designed for birds. Any bird that will fly will immediately head not for the windows, but right up there and perch on one of those things. So I brought my gloves to hold it up, but I'm not sure in the ethical way of holding it. But I'm not sure I better in this situation. But you look here; you can see this is called a silkie. Okay, it's a chicken. Does it look like a chicken? Nah. You ever seen a chicken that looks like this? You know, we have there some Rhode Island reds. You know, up there where I'm pointing, that looks like a chicken. Does this look like a chicken? Look at it. It doesn't even have things that look like feathers. They're like fur, right? It is. It's anatomically fur. Fur, feathers are the same thing. Look at its beak. It has a black beak. You almost can't see its eyes. You can't see its ears. Does this look like a chicken? Vaday not. But Rabbi Yisai, chickens are all galus domesticus because they are all breeds, not species, not even families. They're all breeds. Let me give you. Most people are not so familiar with various birds, but let me give you a mushroom, a maradova doina. Everybody's familiar with dogs. How can anybody think that Saint Bernard and a Shih Tzu or a Dachshund or a Chihuahua are related dogs? They don't look like each other. The mice said, how did they get that way? We know this is historical times, not like chickens where chickens were domesticated already in the times of the Sumerians. We're talking about 3,000 years ago they're domesticated, and that was not a new thing then. Dogs is a very recent phenomenon. How did they get all these very different looking species of dogs? Because, Apoisai, you can breed them for selective traits. You can breed chickens, doves, partridges, but chickens in particular. Chickens are very fungible. You can breed them and get whatever you want. Our very industrious Rabbi Chaim Loike, indeed, has address the question. Rambam told this very, very important anecdote about Rav Aaron Kotler saying, this is not the chicken that we had in Europe. And that's emes. They didn't have Rhode Island Reds in Europe. In particular, where the people still remember that Reb Chaim Loike could address, the chickens were yellow. Now, where here do we have a yellow chicken? We don't. But in Hungary, the chickens were all yellow. So, and they all, none of them are left. All killed out in the war. Bombs fell on them, no more yellow chickens left. But Chaim Loike got a Hungarian chicken. How did he get a Hungarian chicken? Very easy. You take a couple of chickens, breed them, and keep breeding them for a couple of generations for yellow traits, you can get a completely yellow chicken. We could start out with two of these chickens that are accepted everywhere as kosher, and we could create a silky, given enough time and given enough money. We could create a silky. A silky, if you want, there's a picture of it. There's a... Here, they couldn't arrange slides here. So there's a single page. It doesn't say anything. These are all chickens. And not a species like they may not crossbreed. These are all crossbreed. They're all just subbreeds of chickens. Look at them. On the top here, you have a silky. On the bottom there, you have something which is covered. Its face is covered with feathers. Now turn it over, you have the equivalent of the runner duck. This bird is not standing on its hind legs. That's the way it normally stands. Does a chicken stand like that? I never saw one in my life. But you introduce it to a chicken, the chicken will think it's like a Chinese chicken. You know, like we introduce to a chinese, we'll think, oh, yeah, for sure it's a person, but it's a funny looking one. That's what a chicken would think about this. And we could create a chicken like this from our chickens. Now, there is a maimor in the Gemara that everybody knows. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi quoted in Daf Zayin of Becheres that says, and I want you to listen carefully because I'm a linguist and I'll point out something to you about it. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, le'olam ein misaberes. Tahura min hatomei, tamei min hatohir. Never will you have interbreeding, never will you have successful interbreeding from a tamea with a tohir. Notice tamea is feminine, tohir is masculine, because he's loilam enon misaberes. The female is the one who gets pregnant, right? So he's saying the tamea never get a successful breed from the tohir. And the Tohel and the Tahira, the female Tahira, will never get Miss Averes, will never get pregnant, or pregnant, into a chicken, since fertile egg, from a Tohel. And La'olam, V'loy ha-gaso min ha-dako, Va-dako min ha-gaso, Behemagako became a gaso. I won't spend time on that because it's not Nanocha. V'loy chayo min ha-behemo, V'loy behemo min ha-chayo. You will never have a successful interbreeding between a behema and a chaya. Now, everybody knows this, the Gemara says you can't interbreed a kosher and a non-kosher species. But, I want to point out to you, why does it say dako min gaso? Why doesn't it say dako min gas? Like it said by the first one. Why doesn't it say why do they use the Loshen Nekeva and by the Chayo Behemo? Because those, when we're talking about Gaso and Dako, those are adjectives referring to Behemo. Behema Gaso, Behema Dako. Tohel and Tomei, the Gemara is treating as not as names of species, but as adjectives. From that, the Gemara leaves wide open not only the possibility, but actually the inference from the Gemara, and using that Loshen, that it applies not only to animals. Even though the Gemara there is talking about animals, the Gemara is talking about, is not talking about chayas and behemoths either. The Gemara brings it in, agav orcha, And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, La'olam, you never have a Torah with a species which are Torah, which a species which are Tomei. From that, the Avnei Nezer, and other poskim concluded that this is a statement by the Gemara that halachically, if they can interbreed, and you know for sure that one is Torah, then you know for sure the other one is Torah, even though you don't know anything else about it. Now, that's the Avnei Nezer's position. Let me point out that the statement of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is brought in the Gemara. Nobody slugs it up afterwards, but it's not quoted in the Rambam, it's not quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. Mistama, because they never had any need for it. It was not the halacha. But it's not necessarily, just because it's found in the Gemara, doesn't mean necessarily that, hey, we have a Masura, that we paskin like that way. There are lots of memories brought in the Gemara, which are not lahalocha, not brought down lahalocha by the poskim. The Avnei Nezer held it was halocha. The Chamsam Sefer is mefakdek, whether we can rely on this. But the issue I wanted to point out, and the issue why I told Rabbi Loiki that we should bring a silke, and we should bring the various kinds of doves. You see this dove standing here? It's got like a big throat. It's standing up on its hind legs. Have you seen doves like that around the street? That's not what a dove looks like. Right? When you bring it before a person, you would say, what's that? Why is that a dove? It doesn't look like a dove. But now, what happens if we create such a dove? Rather than we crossbreed doves and we take pictures of the ancestors and we can create a dove like that. At that point, poskim agree, if you have the genealogy, if you have the Sefer Yuchzen, and you know that they were from, this was produced from Torah animals, then you know for sure that the animal is Torah. So we could create a Masera, so to speak, about a silky, because we could create from regular chickens over the course of maybe 10 generations, we could create a silky that we would have a Masera on because all of the parents we had a Masera on. Now, I'm not talking about our friend Charles here. I'm talking about a different silky that we would create that looks just like him. Now then, Rabbi, so you see the issue. If you can have two animals which look identical, and if you showed them to a poskim, he would say they're identical, they talk like a duck, walk like a duck, why aren't they a duck? But on the other hand, one of them you know for sure is kosher, and the other one you don't have a masala on. How do you handle this issue? But this is the issue we are facing. This was the issue that Rav Aaron Kotler was facing. This doesn't look like the chickens in Europe. What basis do you have on telling me this is a chicken? Well, the basis is we have a Masera. We know that this is what is shechted, and we could even create it from our chickens here. This is an issue which the poskim have never successfully dealt with because it's not a question which they dealt with entirely. It's an issue which we at the OU, in practical terms, have to confront. Are we going to certify a bird? Because certifying a bird, the OU takes the position, you understand, we're not learning in a base medrash. This is a big difference you have to understand. There's a difference between, as he quoted by the statement of Baruch Be'er. Baruch Be'er knew all about a korkovan, but he never seen a korkovan in his life. There's a difference between learning something intellectually and dealing with it practically. If the OU is going to certify something, that means that the OU holds, based on the Pesach of our poskim, that it is something which all Jews can eat. We don't deal with certifying things which only the Ashkenazim can eat, or only the Germans can eat, or only the Hungarians can eat. We will not give a hashkocha like that. So the question is, how do we deal with saying that the bird is kosher is a big step for the OU, because that means we're declaring to all Jews that based on our Psak Halacha, anybody can eat it. Now, we have established that with our friends the Partridges over there. We have established, due to the efforts of Chaim Loiki, partially before him, but we got one of them certified before him, and he's helped us enlarge it. We now have four kinds of species, in a broad sense, of partridges that are certified. Three of them are Alectoris. One's called the Barbary partridge. One's called the Chuko partridge, and one's called the Red Leg partridge. And then we also have what's called the Gray partridge, which is an entirely different family. It's not an Alectoris at all. As a matter of fact, it won't crossbreed with the Alectoris. But there was a tradition on this, the Perdex, that it was also a kosher animal. So we've got, in the OU, we have now established, how do we establish it? We got evidence from Poiskim, both from Europe and from Asia, that either they knew this animal and that it was kosher, or we got the statement from them that we never saw this in our communities at all. Because what we're worried about, what the OU in practical terms is worried about, is a negative Masorah. Did this community have a Masorah? We don't eat this bird. Like Rabbi Illoui was trying to establish in New Orleans, we don't eat this bird. We know this bird. It's right here, but we don't eat it. But a negative Masorah was only if you know the bird, right? There's no negative Masorah if you live in Europe and never seen this bird and never heard of this bird. How can you have a negative Masorah? You don't have a positive or a negative. So that case, we would accept a tradition from another kehila if we knew for sure it wasn't there in Europe. Okay? This is, so what I was talking about, my time's up, and I'm a Yekes, so I'm a Litvak, so I'm a Dayek on Zman. We talked about, theoretically, the difference between a Masela and not, and we talked about in practical terms. How am I going to... You hear he clucks like a chicken, right? He does. He sounds just like a chicken, and he is a chicken. He is a chicken, except that he doesn't look like a chicken. How do you deal with that? And indeed, there's no... Rabbi Loiki pointed out in his thing, he has the chukar on that page, and he says there is no evidence that this animal was ever shechted. This animal comes from where? From China? And, you know, the big Chinese Jewish community never shechted it. But the Chinese Jewish, we have very little masala from the Chinese Jewish community. They were mostly immigrants from other places, and the bird doesn't exist. This bird doesn't exist in America. But Reb Chaim and I could create it in America if we wanted to. Thank you.